Welcome to another edition of Stokes and Folks. I'm your host, Spencer Stokes, and today we're doing a post-convention podcast. And for those of you who will be listening to this in 25 years, that post-convention was the 2021 Republican State Convention, and it was kind of the end of the COVID era as we know it. And my guests today are Rusty Cannon. Rusty's daytime job is at the Utah Taxpayers Association, and replacing Howard Stevenson as the president. Is that what the title is?
Or that is the title now.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Wasn't Howard called president?
He was, yes.
Okay. Well, you said now, so I thought maybe
I meant for
after,
me.
So, yeah. For you. Okay.
Yeah. Was all vice right. president, now it's president.
And Josh Lee, who works at his day job, is an employee at Election Hive, and also has written two articles, which I think all of you should check out at UTPOL Underground or UtahPoliticalUnderground.com. The first article, which was fascinating, was an interview with every candidate who was running for state party leadership. And then Josh did a very informative article about the actual convention. So we've invited Josh Lee here with us today because, you know, no one ever archives the actual vote tally of chairman's races. So like if you were to try to go back and look at a chair race from 10 years ago, good luck finding that. It doesn't exist. And one of the interesting things we saw in your results was that Stuart Pei, who was running for chair, picked up very few second round votes, and about 400 people left between the first round of balloting and the second round of balloting, according to your vote totals, which I'm positive
right.
are accurate.
And I have to say, getting those results from the party was like pulling teeth. So no wonder nobody ever
exactly
archives them. But
that goes to show a lot, too, about how important it is to run on time. People start to leave, and it makes a difference.
Absolutely.
Well, that's a whole separate show. Everything I thought was wrong with the timing of this, of the convention, but that's a whole separate issue. So this was an interesting, this is one of the first conventions since back when we talked in a previous podcast, when Rob Bishop was the chairman. We had kind of a full week of celebration of the state party convention and ramped up to that. And this year we did something similar because there was a golf tournament on Friday. There was a youth event, I believe, on Friday as well. There was a dinner on Friday night, and then there was the convention on Saturday. And I chalk it up to, and Rob Bishop was joking with me about this because I said he was into the theater, and that's why we did the week long thing when he was chair. But Derek is kind of a theater kind of guy as well. So maybe that's why we did that. But just give me your overall impressions, Rusty, about the convention. I'm going to ask Josh to also do the same. Just kind of the overall tone and tenor of the convention, what you saw, what you thought was interesting. You were behind the scenes all day on Saturday,
yeah,
kind of managing the green room area, the holding area before people went out to speak.
Yeah, it was interesting. Hats off to those that put it together. Kim Coleman was the chair, and then Chris, the new Salt Lake County chair, was one of the coordinators as well. But my job was to make sure that everybody in the green room made it out on stage on time. So it was a fun job. There was one point in there where I sat there looking around. Okay, well, we have both senators here, all the congressmen, well, almost all the congressmen here, everyone that was there at the convention. The governor's wife just sitting there quietly waiting to go speak. And
Lieutenant Governor was back there.
And Lieutenant
well.
Governor was there as well. I'm trying to think if I'm forgetting anyone. And the two World War II vets that they had up on stage were back there, and it was so tender. They visited with every elected official, wanted to talk to them, take pictures, and you know, and interact with them. And that lasted for, I'd say, well over a half an hour.
Interesting.
For those two gentlemen.
And I'm sure
really
they had
cool
their families there with them.
Yes.
Correct?
Yep, they did. Okay. And so that was really neat to see. And then it got really quiet.
So the only member of the congressional delegation that was not there was John Curtis, if I'm correct.
Yeah. He was on the agenda. And so I started asking around, you know, is he coming? And I finally tracked down his chief of staff, which, by the way, looks just like him. And I almost mistook him. And I, you know, is the congressman coming? He said, no, he's not coming. So I told everybody running the show that, listen, the Congressman Curtis will not be here.
It saved 5 minutes.
It did. But then all of a sudden.
He should have been applauded for that.
That's right. But then I was told later, oh, no, wait, some people are going to speak on his behalf, which ended up happening.
Oh, that's right.
His chief is Corey Norman.
I believe so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And boy, Adriel Herring is his campaign manager.
Yeah, I believe so.
For him.
Yeah. And so it went, we only had one surprise moment where they said, hey, we're going to surprise Derek with this,
the gift they
gave him. And all of a sudden, okay, where is everybody? So I had to track down both senators and congressmen. And it was funny. Senator Romney was in another room. He had Capitol Securities, which is a whole different ballgame. And so Senator Lee was
called them Capitol Police.
Capitol Police, mm-hmm. Yeah. And so at one point, I ran down the hall to get Senator Romney, and Senator Lee goes flying by me in full stride, just opens the door and says, "Hey, we got to go." And so we pulled everybody backstage, and then the moment came for them to make that surprise to Derek. Everything else went according to script. The one interesting thing too is, Robert O'Brien was going to speak for 5 minutes on the schedule. I won't say which elected officials, but I guess I finally learned that everyone just chuckled and said, there is no way he speaks for just 5 minutes.
Right.
Apparently they know this guy better than I did. And sure enough, he went on. I can't remember, it was 10, 15 minutes or something like that. And so all of a sudden, we're behind. And this moment I had, it was a little bit funny in hindsight. I had my earpiece in with my radio, and when you have headphones on and you talk really loud by accident, it's dead quiet in the room. All the senators, congressmen are there, the governor, lieutenant governor. Somebody hands me the schedule or looks at the schedule to see if we're running on time, and I just really loudly go, "We're behind." Like, really, and it just came out really, really loud, and I felt embarrassed because everybody just kind of looked at me like, man, who got you in a bad mood today? And I wasn't in a bad mood. It was. I had my headphone in, and I talked really loud. So that was the one light moment back there.
Everybody just gets nervous when you say that.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's a great warning for all of them, because there's only, there's no orchestra. We did this one year, by the way. We had an orchestra that would start playing, like at the Academy Awards,
really?
when a person's time was getting close to wrapping up. And there's one way to become very unpopular really quickly, and that's when you tell the orchestra conductor to start playing while Orrin Hatch is still speaking. Yeah.
Wait, is that what happened to you?
Yeah, I would just say, hey, look, this is the time. You've been given 5 minutes. We're going to do it just like the Academy Awards. We've got this. It was kind of there were probably more brass, so orchestra might be a push. It was kind of a big band sound. So their soft was not very soft when they came in, but we did that one year. I think that was the only year that it was ever attempted, but we stayed on schedule. So,
hey, we'll give you props for that.
Yeah, thank you. So, Josh, tell me about your day because you sat, you were not a delegate,
but
you went to cover and report for Utah Political Underground. .com. There's another plug for that.
That's right. Yeah, I sat on the stage on the east side, so I don't know what county that was a part of, just in one of the suites that were up there. And I have to say, I was impressed with all the bagpipes. It was exciting to be out of COVID and then be part of the environment again. I'm a political junkie by birth, I guess.
You absolutely are.
So I loved it. And the whole time I was thinking, I know, Robert O'Brien said this. He's like, because he lives in California and all the lockdowns there, and then coming to Utah, he had a great line saying, seeing how open it is here and how friendly everybody is, this looks like a Trump rally.
And he was the national security advisor during 2 years of the Donald Trump administration.
That's right. Yeah, and I liked his speech, but just all kind of pomp and circumstance was really exciting, and that's the delegates love that. If, one thing that Donald Trump probably taught the Republican Party, that's how to put on a good show.
And yeah, that's true.
That's what happened. It was super patriotic. Everybody was really excited to be there.
One thing that Donald Trump's rallies will always be kind of a signature for me is how the crowd dealt with a Bernie Sanders supporter or a heckler at the Trump rally. And I felt like we could have used more of that kind of enforcement of the hecklers at the convention. The famous Donald Trump, somebody should just punch him right in the face, was at one of the rallies. And there were a couple of hecklers I would not have minded. The story I've heard is that Jeanette Herbert was sitting in front of the one heckler that just kept going. And she finally turned around and told him to be quiet.
Good for her.
And I would have loved to have seen Jeanette stand up though and punch him in the face. It would have been funny.
Well, we got
to
get that on camera though. Yeah, if
exactly.
That happens.
That's right. Okay. So sorry, I digress. And in a humorous way, I'm really not condoning violence. Let me just go ahead and say that. It was all humorous. Everything I said just up to this point. Okay, Josh, keep going.
And then what I thought was kind of interesting was that I would say maybe 10% were wearing masks, which was, I know the news made, that was a big sticking point for a lot of people. I was kind of surprised that most people were not wearing masks, but it didn't seem to bother anyone. They continued to go throughout the convention, but it didn't become a cumbersome point or anything. So,
well, I walked in with a mask to the dinner on Friday night, or Saturday night, and completely felt like I was Bernie Sanders.
Were you the only one?
I was the only one. Really? I walked in, I walked through the whole crowd, sat down at the table, looked around. I was the only one, and I was really excited because I was wearing this really cool Starry Night Van Gogh mask, you know? So I thought I would have the best mask at the place, and I did. It was the only mask. But yeah, it was a GOP spreader is what I like to call it event.
Yeah, hopefully they're vaccinated or they have
Josh,
inoculation.
That crowd, I'll bet in that crowd, I'm going to say my high estimate is 40% vaccinated.
Okay. Yeah. I think that's fair. That's probably a little more, but yeah.
Yeah. You think that's higher than what you would have guessed? 40%?
Yeah. I would say like 20.
20%. But. Yeah. It was a crowd that I think a large portion believed the election was stolen and that the vaccine is a government conspiracy. There was some of that, I think, in the crowd.
Did you have those conversations with people, or is it just how you viewed the delegates?
After I did, there were some people that came over and talked to me about the election. But so yeah, so keep going. I don't want to digress.
And any of those people, they should read Sam Benson's article on Senator Lee on Utah Political Underground, because he talks about that. Senator Lee himself, he's like, okay, all these accusations, all these claims by the Trump administration or the campaign, and he gave them benefit of the doubt, but they never produced the evidence.
It's one of our top five articles on Utah Political Underground, and people should go read it because it gives a really insider perspective, which I think is awesome.
Yep.
You were in the crowd, and I know you talk about this. You were behind stage when Mitt Romney took the stage. So
I was,
yes. You actually were the one that probably got him up on, told him to go on stage.
Yeah, I told him you're on deck, you're in the hole, you're getting ready to go, that kind of thing. And then he got delayed a bit. But he sat there kind of just off backstage waiting. And, I mean, that was a brave spot to be, and I can't imagine what he was thinking about.
Your executioners are just about ready, Senator Romney. We'll send you to the stage.
Walk up to the guillotine.
Yeah, exactly. So you were backstage with the senator. You were out front, and I know you have a different perspective, and probably an accurate perspective, different than what has been really largely reported.
That's right.
In the mainstream press. But you were telling me that you believed it was maybe 20-30%. It was a loud, smaller group of people doing the booing and shouting. Yeah.
It was the loud minority. Now, I don't know if it was just because of where I was sitting. Like I said, I can't remember what delegate group or county group I was sitting with, but I would say that it was probably 20-30% of the delegates that were actively booing. The rest of them, I would say a good fourth, were trying to stand and clap. They should have just been chanting USA like they do at Trump rallies, right? Because it's a better display of your support and against their boos, which is their disapproval. But it doesn't come across on YouTube or any of the videos, and so it sounds terrible.
So the setup at the Maverick Center was kind of the south side of the Maverick Center. They used the seating that went up into the, in the Maverick Center. And then the stage was probably about a quarter of the way out. And then they had chairs in front of it. And then behind that, they had exhibits. So they had all of the booth space. And I watched kind of all day this one table that didn't have a backdrop or anything. It was just up against the ice hockey, walls. and it had these little kind of homemade cutout squares that had something written on them. And I, the whole time I thought to myself, that's probably like somebody who doesn't believe in the vaccine or is putting out some other, her own message. But this little woman was over there dutifully doing something. And I finally went over and checked it out, and it was a table filled with little badges that she had taped safety pins on the back of that said, I support Mitt Romney's, you know, right to vote his conscience. Mm. And I thought, you know, that what a kind of unique and nice thing to do. If that's your belief, she was there and she was doing, which is my belief as well. I believe you elect a United States senator, and United States senators and representatives, we have a representative form of government, and they cast their votes. And the time to dissent with them or part from how you feel about them is during an election. And so you ought to try to give them, cut them a little bit of slack, because they often, well, always are operating with way more information than we have as the general public. But that's why we are a representative form of government. Yep. If those that were standing up booing want to have a direct democracy, which I know they don't. I know they don't they want to do have yeah. a direct democracy. You know, so it was kind of an antithesis, kind of a funny irony that they want him to do exactly what they want him to do. But they also support a representative form of government. So anyhow, they stood up. They were booing the 20 or 30%. And
yeah.
And what were your other observations about that?
I was surprised at how combative Romney was to those who were booing him. That it doesn't come across as you know, someone that's a seasoned professional, especially when you're speaking and he's ran for president. He knows how to deal with those crowds, but. You know, the line where he said, you know, aren't you embarrassed? Or when he just jumped into, yeah, I know you all know that I'm not a fan of the former president's character issues or problems. As a messaging person, what in the world was he doing?
You compare and contrast that with Spencer Cox came right out and yeah. Rusty, what was his opening line?
I'm trying to remember. I was still backstage. I watched it from a TV back there. I can't
with one
remember.
Earpiece in yeah, your ear. He basically came out and said, I know that some of you here hate me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He took it directly yeah. on in a pretty solid way, and he was prepared.
Right. But yeah. We were sharing this kind of before we started the pod that I had come back the ambassador to the United States from Uruguay was in town doing some trade things and was in town on Saturday and was going to go to the Jazz game that night. And so a friend of mine who was with him asked if he could bring him to the convention, kind of show him the convention and introduce him to some people. And I remember being backstage and, it was interesting to see the governor and Mitt Romney. This was a big speech. It's 2,000 people, and Robert O'Brien commented to Senator Lee, he'd never spoken in front of a crowd that big.
Really?
Can believe that. What he told Senator Lee, he had never spoken to a crowd that big. And so to go out in front of 2,000 people where you know there are many people in the audience that may not like you. I just think it is a brave, amazing gesture that says a lot about our form of government that Mitt Romney showed up. He didn't have to. He could have just blown it off.
Right.
He showed up, took the barbs, you know, gave out a few of his own. Same with Spencer Cox. But I think overall, by and large, they were well received. I mean, you know,
absolutely.
There's people who want to get their, you know, angst out, but I think it's been overhyped when it makes it to the national press. But and because when you're there live in person, it's a little bit different story.
And I will say one thing that I thought was interesting is Cox actually addressed the issue that maybe some people ostensibly have with his dealing with the pandemic. And then he said, but you might not be paying attention because we fared the pandemic really well. Romney, when it comes to messaging, you know, as a writer, that's what I'm focused on. he didn't do that at all. He didn't, you know, ostensibly the reason why delegates were booing him is because they didn't like his votes on the impeachment trial.
Right.
And if he was going to bring it up, like he brought it up, he should have given reasons why. And I was shocked that he didn't, to be completely honest.
Well, we're one of, it's an interesting stat. We're one of, I think it's five states that's a red state where both senators are Republican, where one senator voted to convict and the other senator voted to acquit. And it's kind of, I think it's a really, you know, there have been a couple of articles written about is the tent big enough for both. In the last couple of minutes we have, give me any story or your favorite story from the convention, Rusty, that you...
You know, my favorite story, when the pipe band came out, I love bagpipes.
The bagpipes.
I tell my wife at my funeral, I want bagpipes there.
Right. I call it the second most annoying instrument.
Yeah. Okay. I love them. And what was neat is backstage... we were watching it on a monitor back there for those that, you know, were working back there when they were playing. And then the national anthem, the guy who plays Javert, I think in Les Mis here,
yes,
right now. Oh my gosh, he was phenomenal. And we had probably half the room in that green room were in tears. And it was, that was a special, really
well, they made
well
up,
done.
They made up for that because at the dinner the night before, the pledge was never said.
Oh,
nor was the national anthem sung.
Got it.
So, for a group of like red-blooded, patriotic, you know, constitution banging individuals to not say the pledge. I was wondering if they were making a political statement or something. I didn't know.
Interesting.
But, So I agree with you. I thought the whole kind of opening ceremony,
that was the high point.
Issue,
absolutely.
I'll let Josh kind of, what's your overall?
My takeaway is going back to the party leadership elections. Is your convention speech matters.
Yes.
Practice it in the mirror, record yourself, listen to yourself, give it, you know, dramatic, like do a table reading. And then you've got to nail that thing because some of the candidates who won, it's because they had a fantastic speech.
Mm-hmm.
And we can debate and squabble over their qualifications, their platform. But when you can presentation is everything. So when you can present a good speech, you have a good shot.
Well, I think one of the things that really determined the outcome, and quite frankly, I don't think there's any underlying message of what happened with the leadership. I will tell you that I believe the letter that went out just before the convention of endorsement of the slate, delegates hate to be told what to do. And I think that was a magnification of being told what to do. And I think they rejected it. And I think, like I've told candidates all the time that when we have conventions, I mean, last year was a unique situation, and I really have always wanted to know how many views we actually had of each of the speeches that were recorded and were online. But the speech is the biggest vote mover for a candidate at the convention. So I agree with you wholeheartedly.
Absolutely.
My one takeaway is this. I believe that an organizing convention is exactly that, an organizing convention. And I believe you're there to do the business work of the party. And this is just my longtime hack. My first convention was in 1982. And so I've watched a lot of these conventions, and I can tell you what's good, what's bad in each of them. But the organizing convention should take precedence, the organizing part. All of the fall-to-all of the candidates speaking should have been pushed to the end. And if people wanted to leave and go home and not listen to Mike Lee or, Congressman Stewart or Congressman Curtis, they could have all done that. But the very first things that should be taken care of were the party officer speeches and the vote. And any kind of bylaw or the censure of Mitt Romney should have been done right at the beginning, because it's called an organizing convention for a reason.
Yeah.
Next year is the year for the nominating convention, and that's the year for politicians to shine. And I think if somebody wanted to get a lot of cheers, they should have walked to the microphone and said, I'm here. I'm here to say hi. I'll be here all day. Thank you for your time, and thank you for what you do for the party. And they would have gotten a standing ovation.
You're absolutely right.
But to have the organizing part, the actual vote for the people, that the whole reason you came, to have it at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, in my mind, is like the worst approach.
With no food or drink.
With no food
that's
or
right.
drink.
People were starving.
I had a Swedish fish there, and amazingly,
rebel.
It multiplied. and everybody was able to have a little Swedish Swedish fish. But, well, thanks for joining me. It was fun to talk about a post-convention wrap-up.
Thanks, Spencer.
And thanks to Rusty and to Josh. And we have Tyler here in the studio learning how to do this, and we'd like to thank our producer, Connor Sorensen. This has been another edition of Stokes and Folks. Like us wherever you consume your podcasts, and listen for us next week.